This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Kiplinger Personal Finance Magazine. I'm Jeff Eisman, and today I'll be reading from a recent edition of the magazine, hoping to help you with all of your upcoming financial decisions with positive and up-to-date information. And the first article today is one for all of you listeners of a certain age who may be looking around for some investments to help you with your long-term vision for retirement years. And the headline reads, Funds to Help You Tap Your Nest Egg. New options aim to engineer a steady payout for retirees. And it's an article by Nellie Huang of the Kiplinger staff. Ah, retirement. No more snarled commutes, demanding bosses, or tight deadlines. But after saving for decades, you now have to figure out how to turn your nest egg into a cash spigot. It's a big moment going from earning an income to not earning an income. There's a lot of emotion and change, says Jeffrey DeMasso, editor of the book The Independent Vanguard Advisor. Reengineering your portfolio from accumulation mode to decumulation mode can be daunting. You'll have to get a handle on how much you need for essential expenses, and you'll need a strategy to cover them for the rest of your life. The biggest fear people have about retirement is running out of money, says Ann Ackerley, head of retirement business at BlackRock. Fortunately, a variety of products and services, some new, others newish, are designed to help people spend and invest their savings wisely in retirement. Some are available only in certain workplace retirement savings plans, so access depends on whether it's offered in your plan. Other funds or services are available to all individual investors. We'll walk you through some of the options. All data and returns are through November of last year, unless otherwise noted. First and foremost, you should check your 401k. The first place to look for help is your workplace retirement plan. The SECURE Act, a broad package of changes to rules governing retirement and retirement savings plans, eased the way for corporate retirement plans to include annuities, which are insurance products that pay fixed annual sums, typically for life. In response, some 401k plans are beginning to offer target date strategies with an annuity component that offers a paycheck-like experience in retirement. Like their conventional target date fund predecessors, target date plus annuity strategies invest in multiple asset classes that shift over time to a more conservative mix as you age. The twist is, at a certain point along that glide path, some of your contributions are directed to an annuity. BlackRock's LifePath Paycheck and Nuveen's Life Cycle Income Series are two examples of these. Both will be available in some retirement plans this year. The way the annuity portion works varies. Nuveen's funds invest a portion of the bond portfolio in an annuity at the start of the series glide path, 45 years from retirement. The annuity allocation starts at 2.5% of the portfolio and increases to 40% at the end of the glide path. Allocations to the annuity contract included in the BlackRock's LifePath Paycheck series, by contrast, start when investors hit age 55. The annuity makes up 8% of the overall portfolio to start and then climbs to 30% over the next 10 years. In both series, the annuities have the risk and return profile of a broad market bond fund. Both the BlackRock LifePath Paycheck and the Nuveen Life Cycle Income Series allow investors to choose when to turn on the income. At what age those payments can begin, however, depends on the strategy. Investors can also choose never to turn on the income feature if they don't want it or need it. Plus, the annuities are institutionally priced. There's no transaction fee or sales charge related to the annuity part of the target date strategies, though there is a fee that the insurance company pockets. According to Nuveen, it is reflected in the annuity payout. Expect more retirement funds with annuities to appear in workplace retirement plans coming up. Within 10 years, target date funds with income are going to be the main thing in retirement plans, according to BlackRock's Ackerley. Not all retirement income strategies in 401k plans are tied to annuities, however. The Fidelity Managed Retirement Target Date Funds employ a cash withdrawal strategy that starts at 4% of assets and gradually increases over time as you age. Choose the fund that aligns closest to the year you turn 70. Experts set the glide path and do the ongoing asset allocation for these 401k offerings, as well as create a payout schedule for you. The idea is to provide stable payments and still have a remaining balance, says Sarah O'Toole, a Fidelity Institutional Portfolio Manager. T. Rowe Price has a 401k plan offering called Retirement Income 2020 that aims to deliver a 4 to 5% payout a year in monthly distributions. But it depends on the fund's return. There are only two vintages so far, the 2020 version and the soon-to-launch 2025 version. When the portfolio does well, the payout goes up. When it doesn't, the payout goes down, says fund manager Andrew Jacobs Van Merlin. These strategies are also available to retail investors as mutual funds. Then there are some funds for everyone. If your 401k plan doesn't offer retirement income funds like the ones we just mentioned, or a defined contribution plan isn't available to you, you have a handful of mutual funds and financial services to consider. Unfortunately, none feature the guaranteed income of an annuity. We should note that retirement income funds aren't a new idea. Several firms, including Fidelity and Vanguard, launched managed payout funds back in 2007 that promised to provide a steady income stream. The timing was terrible at that point because it was around the arrival of the global financial crisis, so the funds didn't really catch on. That said, the stars are aligning for retirement income funds today. More retirees are looking for help managing their incomes. Interest rates are higher, and the stock market is recovering. We don't expect you to put all your eggs in one basket or one fund to create a workable retirement income strategy, however. In most cases, retirees should consider generating cash flow from multiple strategies and sources. You'll need an array of tools and products, says T. Rowe Price's Jacobs Van Merlin, taking into consideration the risks you're willing to take, how long you'll live, and how much you've already saved, among other things. Bear that in mind as you peruse the following options of funds. The aforementioned T. Rowe Price Retirement Income 2020 is available as a mutual fund to individual investors. A 2025 version, as we mentioned, will launch this year. The minimum investment in either fund is $25,000. The managers aim to generate a 4 to 5% payout of the fund's average net asset value over the past 5 years, but the monthly distribution will vary from year to year depending on the fund's performance. The goal is to live off the income of the portfolio without dipping into the principal, says Jacobs Van Merlin, though there's no guarantee on that front. So far, the 2020 fund's annualized return since inception in mid-2017 is 5.9%, which falls in line with the fund's annual target payout. The next recommended fund is one that from Schwab called the Schwab Monthly Income Funds. And there are three of them. They launched in March of 2008 and have been tweaked over time. Their main objective is to provide a monthly income stream, although payouts can vary from year to year, even from month to month. Conservative investors who want to preserve principal should opt for the repetitively named Schwab monthly income payout, which holds 30% in stocks and 70% in bonds. Monthly payouts are limited to interest and dividend payments from the portfolio's underlying funds. In a normal interest rate environment, investors might get an annual payout rate of 3-5%. They'd get less in low rate environments. Over the 12-month period ending in last October, the fund's payout rate was 4.15%. But in low rate environments, the payout rate was lower. For example, in the calendar year 2022, it was just 2.42%. And the third of these funds that they recommend is Moderate Risk Investors Schwab Monthly Income Target Payout and Schwab Monthly Income Flexible Payout. Both hold exchange-traded funds with 50% of assets in stocks and 50% in bonds. Target payout aims for a steady annual payout of roughly 5%, though, of course, again, it could be higher or lower. The fund's payout rate was just 3.08% in 2022, and for the 12-month period through last October, it was 5.39%. Flexible payout is designed for investors who can deal with more flexibility in their income stream. The fund aims for an annual payout between 4 and 6%, depending on the fund performance and the market environment. The catch with these funds is that overall returns have been ho-hum. That may be an acceptable trade-off for investors who want a monthly income stream, but in lean years will probably get more capital returned to make that happen. Over the past 5 years, flexible payouts annualized 2.6% return lags 91% of its peers. Income payouts 5-year return at 1.9% lags 78% of its peers. And then there are three American funds that they recommend. American Funds Retirement Income Portfolios. They're worth a look for investors who are less dependent on a regular paycheck and seek a little more capital appreciation. These funds make quarterly distributions and have no payout target because they're designed to be a resource for discretionary spending, not necessary expenses. But the experts behind the fund suggest ranges for annual withdrawal rates for each portfolio. In rough markets, for instance, investors should consider lowering their withdrawal rates. So these three American funds are the American Funds Retirement Income Portfolio Conservative, the American Funds Retirement Income Portfolio Moderate, and the American Funds Retirement Income Portfolio Enhanced. These portfolios, which hold some of the American's best mutual funds, including American Balanced, have annualized returns over the past 5 years that are middling at best, but they have experienced below-average risks relative to peer funds. In 2022, when stocks fell 18% and bonds declined 13%, the conservative and moderate funds both lost just 10%, and the enhanced lost 11%. Those returns ranked among the top 20% of their peers or better. So, there are some funds that may be appealing to those of you who are looking for some income in your retirement years, steady stream or not so steady. Okay, moving on to the next article. This one is a brief article about what's going on and trending these days in the markets. And this article says, consumer debt is up and so are credit scores. Credit scores reached a record high in 2023, but the trend may not last. Credit card debt is at an all-time high, with card balances exceeding $1 trillion, that's with a T, trillion dollars, according to the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. But so far, the mounting debt doesn't seem to be dragging down credit scores. FICO, developer of the credit score most widely used for lenders, reported that the national average credit score rose by 2 points to a record 718 in second quarter of last year. Here's what's behind this surprisingly robust credit increase. First, more people paid down debt during the pandemic. During the COVID pandemic, government stimulus payments issued from April of 2020 to December of 2021 kept millions of Americans financially afloat. At the same time, travel ground to a halt. With nowhere to go and extra money in their pockets, cardholders put a big dent in their outstanding debt. The U.S. Government Accountability Office estimated that credit card holders increased their card payments by an average of $20 to $61 after they received their second and third income stimulus checks. The share of active accounts that carried a balance declined from 50% to 45% from April of 2020 to December of 2021. The second reason for this credit card jump or credit score jump is a strong job market, which kept FICO scores afloat. The Fed's efforts to curb inflation by hiking interest rates had little effect on the job market in 2023. In November, the unemployment rate was at a near record low of 3.9%, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. That same bureau also found that wage growth was healthy, with average hourly earnings rising 4.1% from a year earlier. Steady jobs and rising income allowed cardholders to also pay down debt and thereby up their FICO scores. And lastly, some medical debts were excised from credit reports. Since April of 2023, medical debts under $500 no longer appear on credit reports. The change certainly plays a part in the increase in the scores, says credit expert John Altshimer. Newer scoring models also give less weight to unpaid medical collections than other types of unpaid debts. While the average FICO score climbed in 2023, the increase in credit card debt could reverse this trend. A cooling job market and the resumption of student loan repayments after a three-year pause could lead to more delinquencies, according to Altshimer. He expects that the average credit score will stabilize or maybe even drop this year. Monique White, a financial expert with credit-building website Self, also notes that while overall inflation has slowed, food prices remain elevated. She believes more people are using credit cards to pay for necessities such as food and rent and mortgage payments. That ultimately could lead to missed payments, she fears. If you're having trouble paying down your credit card debt, you have options. Some card issuers continue to provide low-rate balance transfers, or your issuer may agree to lower your rate depending on your situation. So, again, a little bit of dichotomy there. Consumer debt is up, but credit scores are also up. All right, moving on to the next article. And this article is one that's actually an interview that they often do with experts. And this expert is Doug Shadle. He's the Managing Director for Fraud Prevention Strategies, LLC, a Seattle-based consulting firm. He served as the strategy director for ARP's Fraud Watch Network for nearly 20 years. And this interview is titled, How Identity Thieves Are Exploiting Your Trust. Con artists are disguising themselves as well-known brands to steal your money and your personal information. It's an interview that was conducted by Sandra Block of the Kiplinger staff. You've been on the front line of fighting fraud for more than 30 years. What has changed in that time? Have we become any better at protecting consumers? Mr. Shadle's reply is, there's good news and bad news. The bad news is that over that 30-year period, fraud has gotten precipitously worse. It's the new crime of the century. The good news is that there are a lot of people focusing on fraud prevention. As recently as 10 years ago, it was hard to get law enforcement interested. Now, stopping hackers, phishing, and other scams is all anybody's talking about, and a lot of people are paying attention and getting better at it. One of the most recent trends is imitating trusted brands such as banks and major retailers to trick consumers into giving up personal information. Why is that effective? Mr. Shadle says, I've interviewed more than 24 con artists about their strategies, and they all say the same thing. Gain the victim's trust, get them under the ether, and create urgency. Getting them under the ether, a slang term all con artists use, means getting people into such a heightened emotional state that they're no longer thinking rationally. It used to be that the number one tactic was promising wealth. Now, the vast majority use the fear of loss. They'll try to convince you that somebody hacked into your bank account or got your Social Security number. Whether they're saying something too good to be true or too bad to be true, either will get you into that ether state. If you get a text message or see a social media post that causes you to become anxious or nervous, that's a red flag. Well, who's most vulnerable to fraud then? With some scams, he says, age matters. For older people, it's tech support scams because they're uncertain about how to use their computers. But I spent 20 years looking for a magic demographic description that makes people vulnerable, and I couldn't find it. The closest we could come was people who had experienced stressful life events. The really skilled con artists spend the first conversations looking for that victim's Achilles heel, the loss of a child, for example, to ratchet up their ether. Con artists often use social media to scam people. How can we protect ourselves short of leaving social media altogether? Mr. Shadle says, on Facebook, make sure you've adjusted your privacy settings so that only close friends and relatives can see what you're posting. We've surveyed people about whether they've changed the privacy settings on their Facebook account, and 40% say, what privacy settings? Lots of people belong to Facebook groups, and you trust people in the group because they're your peers. That leads to what's known as affinity fraud. Anytime somebody reaches out to you out of the blue, whether it's from your Facebook knitting group or your bank, it's a red flag. Lastly, what are the most effective ways to shield yourself from fraud outside of social media? He says, if you use a peer-to-peer payment app, never send money to someone you don't know. Also, update antivirus software on your devices. Freeze your credit and use call blocking tools to prevent scammers from contacting you by phone. As artificial intelligence becomes more sophisticated, you need to reduce the likelihood you'll be targeted because AI makes it increasingly difficult to detect who's a fraudster and who isn't. AI can make somebody in the Philippines sound very much like a sheriff in Texas. If they can't reach you, you don't have to worry about that. So take charge of your accounts. Sounds like good advice. We are always hearing about these scams, new ones coming every day, as he said. Okay, I think we may have time for one more article. This is in the briefing section of the magazine. And speaking, it's related, I guess, speaking of scams, this one also says, protect yourself against payment scams. Peer-to-peer payment services provide a convenient way to transfer money among family members and friends, but they have some significant downsides when it comes to fraud protections. Regulatory standards don't require these services to reimburse users who are tricked into sending money to scammers. For example, a crook may pose as a representative from a victim's bank and request a funds transfer through an app such as Cash App, PayPal, Venmo, or Zelle. Once the victim initiates that transfer, the money goes to the crook. The good news is that some scam victims who use Zelle, a peer-to-peer service owned by several major banks, are getting relief. Last summer, financial institutions that participate in Zelle's network began reimbursing customers who sent money to criminals claiming to be from a government agency, bank, or existing service provider. The move follows criticisms from some lawmakers that fraud and theft had become rampant on their platform. Broader federal oversight of peer-to-peer services may be on the way as well. Last fall, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau proposed that large non-bank companies offering services such as digital wallets and payment apps should go through the same supervisory exams that the CFPB performs on banks. If the CFPB's proposed rules are finalized, these large providers would have to follow the same rules as large banks, credit unions, and other institutions that the CFPB currently oversees, including compliance with certain consumer rights regarding money transfers and privacy. So the best tip is just to be on guard. Zelle's move to reimburse some fraud victims is encouraging, but its policy doesn't cover all types of scams. And other major peer-to-peer payment services don't guarantee reimbursement to those who are duped into sending money to fraudsters. Using payment apps to send money only to people you know and trust is the best way to go. Legitimate entities will not demand that you send them money with a peer-to-peer app. Notably, if a criminal hacks into your payment app account, the liability protections for the underlying payment method apply. If a crook logs into your Venmo app and transfers money with a debit card that's connected to your account, for example, you have no liability if you report the loss within 60 days after your statement is sent to you. So, I don't know about you, but these person-to-person payment plans and that sort of thing do seem to be kind of loosey-goosey. So, user beware. And one other thing here is that they do have an inset here from the briefing section. And the headline reads, IBM says goodbye to the 401k match. Effective January 1st of this year, IBM is no longer providing employees with a 5% matching contribution plus a 1% automatic contribution to their 401k plans. Instead, the firm is contributing an amount equal to 5% of employee salaries into a retirement benefit account, which will provide 6% interest through 2026. And then starting in 2027, the account will earn the yield of the 10-year Treasury note with a minimum yield of 3% per year through 2033. After that, the yield will match that of the 10-year Treasury without a floor. Why the change? A likely reason is that IBM has a $3.5 billion surplus in its pension plan, which the company could use to cover contributions to the retirement benefit accounts. That would free up significant cash for IBM's bottom line. The move may be beneficial for the small percentage of employees who don't participate in IBM's 401k plan, who, like other employees, will gain company contributions toward their retirements without being required to add savings from their own paychecks. But it could be detrimental to in other ways. So, for any of you who might work for IBM or somehow be involved with this, it seems like they may be starting a trend in regard to 401k matches. That brings us to the end of our time this week. As usual, you can reach us here at WRRS with any comments or questions you might have. Our number is 513-487-4245. This has been Jeff Eisenman for Kiplinger Personal Finance Magazine. Thanks for listening. Hope you have a great day.